try to pick up with last week's question. If I leave someone's question out, I don't think it's on purpose. So just resend it. I hope we'll get to finish. It's a very long list. I hope we'll get to finish it. So we'll go back to two points we were talking about last time. But first, I thank you to the Mandels again for hosting us. It's when you do something twice, then it's like a given. It's not a given. It's not a given, and thank you very much to you and your husband. And last time we began also with the idea that houses have the halacha they're accustomed to. So whatever you verified, there are many opinions in halacha. What we're learning here is not, this is the only way to go. If your husband's rav said differently or you learned differently, there are multiple opinions which we can't cover. So nothing that's said here is coming to disqualify anything else. This is my tradition, and people shouldn't come home and then start saying, you know, we did this wrong and that wrong and the other thing wrong. If you verified what you're doing and now you're learning differently, then you have to verify. Maybe what you're doing is perfectly fine. last time I mentioned the story of Rav Halberstam, who, when I asked him about cleaning off the tablecloths, so he refused to answer me. He just said it's mutter and told me I was welcome to leave his office. So I just wanted to clarify that Rav Halberstam Zatzal was a very warm person. And even when he'd tell me to leave, he'd say it with a smile. And he'd say in Yiddish, Gai gesunte heit, go and be well. And then he'd stop me before I left and he'd say, you noticed I said gesunte heit. I did bless you. I didn't just say go. He would do it half jokingly. So I felt maybe I gave him a wrong impression. And we also started discussing tefillah for women. It's interesting that women's tefillah has a very special place in Tanakh. We discussed the idea that a woman isn't chayav in davening three times a day, and that a woman does her obligation really with Birchas HaTorah. And we also ended off with mentioning that if a woman has the time to sit on WhatsApp or Facebook, then she should really be spending that time davening. However, there's the baseline. A person should say Birkot HaShachar if a person could. A person should make the blessings about the fact that we can see, the fact that we can stand up, the matira suim, zokef kefufim. And from there, a person has to see what time they have in their day, if they can get in a Shmona Esrei or not. But even the Chafetz Chaim, who wrote that women have to daven, I heard from earlier generations that his wife didn't daven. Meaning the idea that you have to, that's provided that you're not obligated to other mitzvot. Now, a woman running a house with children, she's obligated to other mitzvot. And we have to remind ourselves sometimes that what we're doing all day, most of our day as a wife, as a mother, is a mitzvah. Changing that diaper is a mitzvah. Meaning if you would volunteer in an orphanage or somewhere else and you'd be changing diapers there, it would be obvious that what you're doing is a mitzvah. So we have to remind ourselves that Baruch Hashem, our kids aren't orphans, but when we change the diapers, we are doing a mitzvah. And as a mother, that means that my responsibility to the home and to the kids, that's something I have to do. And my tefillah, even if I'm going to go with the more stringent opinions, which is not my tradition, even if you learned in seminary or whatever, that there's a greater obligation than what I said, even that opinion of the Chafetz Chaim is only if you really can do it, not at the expense of the mitzvot you're obligated to. If a woman's going to run her life and be very pressured to get in her shachris and her mincha, and then everyone pays the price for that, so that was not the idea. And that's why I was told that Chafetz Chaim's own wife did not daven, because practically you run a house, you don't really have the time. So whatever you can get in, it's good. And sometimes it's good to get in a few minutes of meaningful tefillah, or I should say a few seconds of meaningful tefillah, because a person should connect to their bon shalom during the day. There's a joke they tell of a guy who goes to his friend and he says, you know, last night I had a dream. He says, you know, they say you dream at night what you thought about during the day. So what was your dream? He says, very strange. The Ribbono Shel Olam appeared to me in my dream. So he says, well, for sure you didn't think about him all day, so why would that happen? And that can happen, that a person can run a whole day, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is really not in his day all day. So a person taking the few seconds to have a meaningful moment with the Ribbono Shel Olam, which sometimes is that moment of frustration, Ribbono Shel Olam helped me not kill these kids. But if it's meaningful, if it's a moment of connection, so that's important. Meaning, the Ribbono Shel Olam should be a part of our day. The idea that a woman isn't as obligated in davening does not mean that a woman should leave that part of her life irrelevant. The next question which came up, the next question was about meat and milk and an oven, and when you bake something in a meat oven, can you eat it with a cup of coffee? So there are really two questions here. There's the question of our dishes, the pots and the pans that we use, and then there's the question of our oven, which are really two different questions. So maybe we'll begin with the dishes. That's something which is, I translated a chart that we once sent out in Hebrew. I don't know if there are enough copies here. If someone didn't get it, they could email us. And we'll go over what this says. And you'll notice we break it down to Ashkenazi and Sephardi. Let's begin with understanding what's really going on here. We have a pot. We cook in that pot our cholent. Okay, so it's our meat pot. We know that. If on Matzei Shabbos I clean out the cholent, and now I fill that pot with water, and I cook the water in that pot. So until Matzei Shabbos, I had cholent in that pot. I cleaned out the pot. Now I put fresh water in that pot, and I cook it. So being that within the last 24 hours, that pot was used for meat, that pot is called Ben Yomo. Within the last day, within the last 24 hours, it was used for meat, in our case. When I cook water in that pot, my assumption is that the water absorbs the flavor of the meat that was cooked in the pot. So where does this come up? You want to make parv potatoes. You want to make rice. You're going to make a parv soup. So if you're using a pot that was used within the last 24 hours for meat. So that's our first thing on the chart. So now, if I intend to melt cheese on this rice or on these potatoes, if I intend to take this pasta and cook it again with milk, if I intend to take these potatoes and sauté, recook them in a dairy pot, if I'm going to put them on a plate with, when they're hot, I'm going to put them in a milchic meal, so I'm going to put them on my dairy dishes. So I don't lechatchila cook them in my meat pot. Meaning, when I know that my meat pot is a ben yomot, was used in the last 24 hours, then I don't cook food in that pot when I intend to bring it in contact with milk, when that's my intention. Now, what happens if I meant to eat my potatoes plain? I didn't mean to eat them with cheese. And then my kids say, hey, the potatoes are yummier with cheese, with sour cream. So an Ashkenazi can't do that. If by mistake it got mixed, it's kosher. But I can't say, well, I didn't mean to do it, so now I can eat it with dairy. For a Sephardi, you could. So long as a Sephardi didn't intentionally do it for that, a Sephardi could eat it with milk. So that's a big difference between Sephardim and Ashkenazim and a Ben Yomo. So again, when my pot was used within the last 24 hours, and I cooked parv in that pot, so I cannot do it with the intention, nor may I eat it with dairy. That's on a ben yomo. It was used in the last 24 hours. But maybe I have a pot that had cold cholent sitting in it for the last 3 days. It's Tuesday night, and I realize no one's finishing that cholent. I clean out the pot, and now I'm going to make rice in that pot. Now I have a clean pot, a fleshik pot, that's an eino ben yomo. It wasn't used in the last 24 hours. So now I'm going to cook parv soup in that pot. So I'm not allowed to do it with the intention. Let's say I'm going to make a soup and put in pieces of cheese. I'm going to cook my rice and sprinkle cheese or eat it with sour cream. So I'm not allowed to do it with the intention. I can't make something in that pot that I'm going to eat with milk. However, if I didn't intend to do it, and then my intention was to eat parv potatoes. After I cooked the potatoes, I decided I want it with sour cream. I want to eat it with milk. That's mutar even for an Ashkenazi. A Sephardi could even do it with the intention. So again, on an eino ben yomo, on a pot that wasn't used in the last 24 hours, I can't intentionally cook parv food with the intention of eating it with dairy. However, after I cooked it, if I want to eat it with dairy, now I'm allowed to. And a Sephardi could even do it intentionally. So ben yomo, if the pot was used in the last 24 hours, even after I cooked it, I can't eat it with dairy. And an eino ben yomo, I'm talking to Ashkenazim primarily, I think. And an eino ben yomo, if the pot was not used in the last 24 hours, so then, if after I cooked it with a pyre of intention, I want to eat it with milk, I'm allowed to. That's in a nutshell what's written over here. I did not discuss davar harif, sharp things like sliced onions, things that take out flavor. That's its own topic. And obviously you just reverse everything we just discussed for a dairy pot eating with meat. It's the same concept. Yeah?
Okay. You're talking now about actually eating the food together.
Correct.
Yeah. But in the ben yomo, if you have one and you're followed by the other.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Right. And you're not fleishik when you eat it.
Of course. You
don't become fleishik.
No.
You stay part of it.
Yeah.
In your example for that, you said if you clean the pot on Tuesday night and then use it, then you said if you're not using the pot, you mean boiled something in the pot. So if you didn't use the pot in 24 hours.
If I didn't heat up fleishik in the pot in the last 24 hours. Yeah. So long as I didn't heat up fleishik, it did not absorb the meat flavor in the last 24 hours. Chazal told us that after 24 hours, the flavor that's absorbed becomes noten tam nifgam, becomes pungent. Provided that I did not cook in it now something sharp. If I'm going to cook an onion inside, that already brings back the original flavor. That's davar harif brings back the original positive flavor. So even on an eino ben yomo pot, if you're going to saute onions on your frying pan or on your pot, and you'll say, but I'm making onion soup. Right, but that onion soup is, let's say, in a fleishik pot, it's fleishik. Because the davar harif, the sharp food, bring out the original flavor. So the whole concept that we're discussing here is only with something that's not a davar harif. If we're already touching on davar harif, okay? So davar harif includes hot peppers, includes horseradish, includes onions and garlic. And when a davar harif has two unique things. One is that when you cook it or fry it, so it brings out the original positive flavor even on an eino ben yomo, even if the pot wasn't used in the last 24 hours. The other thing a davar harif does is what's called duchka de sakina. If I use a knife to cut my onion, and I use a dairy knife, so now my onion absorbs dairy flavor, even though everything was cold. If I use a meat knife to cut my onion or garlic, so my onion or garlic absorb a meat flavor. Now I'm not allowed to use them in the, if I used a meat knife, I'm not allowed to use it in a dairy dish. So that's the concept of davar harif. When I cut something sharp, so then, even if I was using everything cold, and I haven't used that knife for anything in the last 24 hours, I still say that the sharp food brings out the flavor that was in the knife. And that's why when we cut onion and garlic, we should cut them with a parv knife on a parv cutting board, so that our onion and garlic remain parv. Later on, you'll decide to put it in cholent. It'll go in cholent. You'll decide to put it in your lasagna. It'll go into the lasagna. But we try to keep it parv, and if we didn't keep it parv, we should label it as such. You shouldn't have a fleishik onion you cut with a fleishik knife. You shouldn't have that sitting in your fridge not labeled, because you might remember and your kids won't remember, your husband won't remember. It should be labeled if it's not going to be. Then ideally, we try to keep it parv. We do try to keep our things parv. We cut davar harif. We cut sharp things with a parv knife on a parv cutting board. Okay, so yeah.
Back to before davar harif.
Okay.
Okay, if you leave something cold in a dish, let's say in a pava dish, for 25 hours?
Right.
Does that make the dish itself not so fleishik?
Call and ask. We won't go there now.
Okay, I went there because we talked about not just when you talked about a pot that wasn't right, ready to mow, you didn't just say, okay, you used it 2 days ago. You said, but you had the stuff sitting there the whole time.
Right, right. It deserves a long answer. I want to cover other more basic things. I don't even want to go into that concept. If people will want, down the road, we could go into it. It's, let's leave that hanging for now. The next thing which we have to discuss is an oven. Okay. Should we speak about lighter things first? Is it too much at one shot? Or should we go with the beginning of the night? It's the same topic. Okay. Do you have an oven tray that you feel comfortable taking out? Not of course. Yeah, the ones that fit in the oven. I'm asking for this. That's perfect. I'm asking for this because I got a Shaila by WhatsApp, and I thought he was talking about one thing, and this keeps happening. Okay, so this is like a shelf of an oven, right? So when we speak about an oven tray, we're talking about this. Now,
not the reshet, not the metal.
That's okay.
I have the same.
You want to bring that out too?
Yeah. Yeah, I have this, but without the height.
Well,
right.
It's flat. Well, it's the same.
It's called. There's this.
Like, I have something like this. This container. Yeah. Like this.
Hold on.
No, but you're baking a cake. This is the cake would go on this.
Yes.
Like, that's a rack.
This is a rack.
Yeah. This is a pan.
I need all of them.
That's
okay. Why. That's why. No, I realized that.
This is what you put like a cake on, like a pan that you're baking something in the going.
You put the baking pan there. Yeah.
Whereas this, I put like if I put some paper on, like I'm making cookies.
This
so
is
make, well, this is probably, but
this
if I'm just
the
everyone.
This is cool.
Yeah, I put paper and then I put the challah. Yeah.
So I put my challahs in a tray and everyone's different.
And then
everyone's
matter.
Different.
Like
that's why
paper.
I need to show and tell. Right.
You put baking paper. Yeah. That's it.
I don't know if that matters, but like if I'm making a cake and a pan, would matter. But some people would put it on this.
Yeah, I'll do that. This is paper.
Okay.
Can I have one more? Thank you.
This is a Pyrex.
This is glass.
So glass from our end is the same. We don't treat glass differently.
Okay.
Okay. So the only time we treat glass differently, we'll skip to the end already, is on glass cups because you don't cook in them. But any glass that goes in the oven, like a Pyrex or a Duralex from our end, we have Fleishik, Milchik, and Parv, and even Svardim, everyone, we have separate glass dishes for things that get heated in the oven. The only time that most people will use the same glass for Fleishik and Milchik and Parv is, really, Milchik and Parv, is the glass you drink in because that's a cliché, you're not cooking in it. So a glass cup, and here we don't differentiate between Duralex and Pyrex, etc., even though they are very different. One's made of lead, etc. However, in glass that you are using, not directly in the heat of a fire, so there, the minig is that you'll take the same glass cup and drink tea at your Fleishik Shabbos table, and then last night you drank a cup of coffee with it, even though that's dairy and that's meat, but you didn't cook in it. Hungarians don't do that. Hungarians don't have the same.
Hungarians doesn't do that.
Hungarians don't bring a Fleishik and Milchik the same glass.
For the table, that's
yeah,
true.
I don't know what your parents do. No, Hungarians don't do it, but many Ashkenazim do use the same glass cups because you're not really you're not heating in that glass. So it's always going to be a cliché, meaning you're never cooking in that glass. So yeah.
If you microwave water in that glass, then that would be a different halacha.
Right. If you're heating in it, then you run in, then you should have separate for Fleishik and Milchik and dairy. Yeah.
What about a dishwasher?
Wait, let's finish with
separate the dishwashers.
Let's stay where we are.
Slowly.
Let's start slowly. Dishwasher has so many questions I have to ask you before I answer. Let's stay here again. Cool. Okay, so now we're dealing with our oven tray. Okay, so some oven trays look like this. Some oven trays are what we call a reshet. What do you call this in English?
Rack.
And some oven trays are deep, so they actually, you can bake a cake in them. In Israel, this is what's common. Many people actually bake their cakes in this. Now, one of the things I learned in these halachot, just might interest you, is that when you're baking a cake, and you bake it on this, so so the disposable tins aren't so thick, and then the bottom of your cake doesn't bake as well. However, if you bake a cake on this, then the heat spreads out, because you're not over here, you don't really have equal heat, and then the top will burn, and the bottom, I never told you this, I know.
I know, I just said you were a and I know you people are
so never told you.
Okay. We got to learn a lot together.
Yeah, everyone here is learning.
So now when we deal with our oven tray, maybe we'll start with what people don't know, and then we'll move on to what people do know. No, we'll go the other way. We'll go the other way. So let's start with a simple case. You want to cook a pair of cake in your oven. Mm-hmm. There are many shitot about how to do this. My tradition is very stringent, and we will not learn it. What I'm going to discuss is the commonly accepted halacha all over the world. Those who want to be machmir, there are plenty of shitot to be machmir. What we're going to discuss is what most people do and what most opinions hold is kosher. Sfardim, Ashkenazim, this is the accepted opinion. Rav Moshe was exceptional in how machmir he was in regards to ovens. I don't see any reason to go into that. We will stick to what is commonly accepted as halacha with regards to ovens. Those of you who specifically go by Rav Moshe Feinstein, well, then that's a separate conversation. So let's begin. I have an oven. I have my oven trays. Ideally, we should have separate oven trays for dairy, for meat. And we have a meat oven and a dairy oven, and we should have a separate tray for meat or parv. What if I don't do that? I never heard this before. So we'll discuss that a little bit later. We'll discuss either one. This thing or this thing. Any one of these that you're going to make challah on. So, okay, we'll start there. Fine. I want to leave that for last. Okay, so we'll start there, and I'll explain why I'm saying what I'm saying and how to get around it, and then we'll come back to what the original question was. What's the issue with this rack? The issue is that when you cook chicken, the chicken spills, and you have the heat of the oven, and basically what you have is a very fleishik rack. All of these things, assuming they're fleishik, are very fleishik. And the reason they're fleishik is because in reality, if you're making, let's say, in the dairy oven, you're making pizza, the pizza spills, and the heat element is opposite it, and it's sizzling on the rack, or tray, whatever you want to call these shelves, they are very fleishik or milchik. They are not, when we speak about an oven being used for parv, we're talking about the oven, but not the shelves. Mm-hmm. The shelves, and the same is true for Pesach. People want to use the leniency that Rav Bochka wrote about, that you could kasher an oven for Pesach, and I asked Rav Bochka, and then he pointed this out, and he wrote about it, and then he publicized it again, that everything he wrote was not about the racks, not about the shelves. Because the shelves, you baked challah here. So it absorbed directly from the challah. The only way to kasher this for Pesach is to put a blowtorch to it, and it won't blast the blowtorch. It can't handle a blowtorch. So what do? We want to use this. So we want to use our trays for making parv. You want to make parv cookies in your fleishik oven, and you want to eat them, right? With chocolate chips and milk, right? Chocolate chip cookies with milk, right? So how do you get to parv? So what I wanted to start with, which we're going to wait with for now, is how do I make the whole oven parv? But the tray, I can't make parv. I can't make it parv because I'm always going to have a little bit of grease that's spilled, and baking paper isn't considered a separation between the tray and the food. And this is one of the least known halachos which are relevant to every housewife. People don't know this. And everyone should know this. Our baking tray is problematic in the sense that that cannot become parv. So how do I get around that?
I have another question.
Wait. Let's finish and then we'll get to it. How do I get around that? Either I have separate trays for parv and fleishik or milchik, or what I could do is the following. I could take two disposable tins. You can get disposable tins that are the size of your tray. And then I could bake in that. Everything I want should be parved. Why does that help me? Because if I have grease that's all over here, If I were to use one disposable tin, then the grease gets absorbed into the disposable tin, and from there into my challah. If I have an oven, what I have here is I have an oven tray rack shelf, which sometimes has meat grease on it. If it's my dairy one, sometimes it has oil from pizza or cheese or whatever you put there. So if I want to make something tarv, if I were to put only one tin, disposable tin on it, so then the grease that's here would get absorbed into my tray and from my tray into my food. So when I have two tins, so we have a concept in halacha that says, "Ein kli bolem mikli b'lo rotev." One vessel cannot absorb from another vessel when there's no liquid in between them. So if I have two disposable tins, even if it got absorbed to the first one, it won't go to the second one. Because it won't transfer, flavor won't transfer from one vessel to another vessel. It doesn't matter how hot they get, so long as there's no liquid in between the vessels. So if the...
So it has to be dry?
Mm-hmm. Should be dry, yeah.
So if you have two the same size, which I just cup into the other one.
That's fine.
And that'll still
that's
be enough.
Fine. Yeah.
It only counts if you're cooking directly on the tray.
So correct.
But the baking tray is
not enough. Right. Let's go one step at a time.
You're making the chicken.
Yeah, but if I make the chicken in a metal casserole on a pyrex.
Okay, so I'm making chicken on here.
Yeah.
And my chicken spills. If not on Sunday, then on Monday. If not when I do it, when my husband does it. But it spills, right?
Yeah, that's so spilling.
I have chicken grease on my trays.
Okay.
Now, if I'm going to take a parv tray, cookie tray, I want to make parv cookies, and I put it on the grease. So some people told me, are you kidding? We take out the tray every day. We take Sano, we clean it all. It's spick and span. I don't know. It was the first time I ever heard of such people. I think most people don't run their houses that way. I'm saying reality is you have grease that cooks that gets stuck and you don't have time in the day-to-day. The average person on their tray, they have this cook and that cook. So we don't lechatchila take a parv cookie sheet or my parv halos and put them down on chicken grease and then say, well, my oven is parv. The whole concept of making the oven parv works with vis-a-vis the whole oven. But my tray that has little spots of chicken oil or fat or whatever it is on it, and it doesn't help that I put baking paper. If I want to, I could put tin foil, two layers. But realistically, tin foil tears. And that's why I didn't give that option initially. If you want to get that really thick tin foil that you use on Pesach, it's not a practical solution. That tin foil cuts your hand every time, the edges of it are sharp. It's not a really good solution. A better solution is to take two disposable tins, get them the size of your thing, buy the good ones, and big deal, they usually have the really thick ones, get the good ones and use them for 2 or 3 years. Now you're going to use it for 2 or 3 years, title it. It's not disposable anymore. A disposable tin, which you're using for 2 or 3 years, is not a disposable tin anymore. You have to title that. However, once you have two, you label those two. This is my parv one. Now, you'll notice that the lower one has grease on the bottom after a month. You don't care. That's why you have two. You don't have to spend your time cleaning that bottom one. You know that bottom one is going to get greasy. That's exactly why you're taking two, so that the bottom one can get greasy and the next one will remain clean and the flavor doesn't go from one to the other and you're fine. And then you can make your parv challah and your parv cookies and you've just replicated your shelf. Now, again, if I have grease over here and I put baking paper, so then my assumption is that the flavor goes through the baking paper to my food, to my cookies, to my challahs. I can't assume it's parv. If I am going to put one layer of tin foil, is it going to tear? Maybe not. Maybe you're really good, but when you peel off the cookies, the first time it'll tear, the second time you haven't accomplished that much. So the more practical idea is to take two disposable tins and put them on your baking tray. So that's in terms of our baking tray. Now we'll talk about our oven after we take a few questions. Yeah.
Okay, you keep making the point that the foil pan is going to be the same size as the tray. Does it have to be?
No, just if people are going to use this little tin, they're going to say I ruined their kitchen for them. I want people to be able to bake as much as they want. I'm saying realistically, it's more practical if people get the right measurement. It's a one-time investment, and then you've replicated your tin. If you're going to just get a small one, then the day will come when you suddenly want to make three challahs, and you won't have that. And then you're going to start working with tin foil. You could put two layers of tin foil. You could do that. It's just a little tedious, and then to make sure it doesn't tear. And it's just I'm trying to give a practical long-term solution. When we speak about how to run a kitchen, so part of our goal is that things don't mess up, that we set it up in a way that in the long run it works. You're right, we could do that.
So yeah. Make it easy, buy a second one and use it as a park.
So that's easy and expensive. They sell these very, very expensive,
really?
Meaning if they come with your oven.
We had one that Trey fell across the street together. It was like 200 shekels.
Right.
Oh, really?
It's really ridiculous.
It almost pays to buy a new
oven.
I'm saying it's so expensive each one.
I didn't notice that they're so
expensive.
Correct. Unless you have a self-cleaning oven. Self-cleaning oven is its own conversation. But how many times are you going to make that self-cleaning oven self-clean? We're not discussing Pesach yet. Let's saying if we'll have no, look, Pesach is its own conversation.
Does the bottom tray really have to be titled? You're not cooking food.
The bottom tray would not. You're right. If you keep the bottom, you're right.
You have to keep the bottom.
You need, because it's attached to
this. You're right. The bottom one would not. So
but once you're already pulling the total line, you really can't get that other one.
But the ones
you also have to remember
have to
you didn't
titled,
title it.
Right?
That's what they say. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's what the Vadat says. That it has their hechsher, but those are the flimsy ones, aren't they?
Yeah, the ones that you're talking about are your marriage
ones. And they're much better.
Yeah.
But the bigger ones,
they have a badat, so you need to toilet them?
I don't think so. I think the badat says you don't have to. Yeah.
You need not to toilet them, or you need to... Yeah.
So I usually bake on this with either, let's say, it's cookies on a tray like this. Just cake on something like this. I bake in my dairy oven because I always think I'm often going to have cake with coffee. And if I have dessert, it's after the plation meal anyhow.
Okay.
Am I wrong in my calculations?
We're not yet up to that. We'll get there.
Okay.
This is, I got to discuss
the... We all have things. We do things a certain way, too. This is just for the Machaga. We all do things, and the question is, am I doing this right, or am I doing this wrong all these years?
No,
we have to think why, and I feel like I need to make sure that I'm doing it.
We're going to get to it in 1 second. That's where I wanted to start.
This is why, but I just want to make sure I'm not messing it up.
Is that a separate tray?
Huh? What?
Like the tray.
This I put on my rack. This is like a cookie sheet.
You put this on the rack.
I put it on the rack.
Right, but okay. So if we could take this for a second. Okay, so that. Here's my milchik oven, and I have all kinds of little grease marks from the pizza and whatever I heated up here. If I take my pyrof tray and put it on here. So my parv tray isn't parv anymore.
Yeah.
It becomes melted.
Because what did I just do? I'm saying I took my parv tray and I put it on cheetah's oil.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's why I should have something else that goes in between.
It's nothing literally. I always bake in my chalavi oven, but I always thought that this was parv. So now you're telling me that this is really dairy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that.
No,
because there's a longer answer.
To have the reasons why I feel like you eat baked goods with coffee.
I'm not saying halacha lemaisa, that deserves a different answer.
Okay.
We're discussing how to run a kitchen.
Okay.
You're asking me whether that is dairy, that deserves a separate answer. No. We're saying on a conceptual level, the way we run our kitchen is to ensure we don't reach a point where that becomes dairy.
Yeah.
Are you asking now, is it dairy? That's its own question. I'm saying it's a different question. So let's start again.
You're saying when you want your oven now, you should do it. Not.
I'm saying moving forward, so we should have a separation between our parv tins and our racks. Ideally, we should have separate racks for meat and parv, or dairy and parv. A lot of people don't. We didn't get that many racks with our oven. We don't have that. I'm saying, so the way to do it is to have another separation. So if, let's say, I have a cooking sheet like that rack that goes on this rack, right? So then I would put tin foil here and then my cooking sheet. I've accomplished the same thing. My point is that I have two vessels whereby the vessel which I'm putting my cookies on is not in contact with my rack that's filthy. And we all have racks that are dirty. I'm saying realistically, it's not. What we're discussing now is how to run the kitchen. Now, I anticipate many people will be calling tonight and saying, wait a second, now what about all my cookie sheets? Are they fleishig, milchig, or par? That's another question. Now, what did I do and what my cookie sheets are? That's a different question than our question now of how to run a kitchen. But when we run the kitchen, our trays, ideally our racks, should be separate, dairy, meat, and par. And the way to keep, and if I don't have separate racks for par, then I need to have a separation between my rack, my shelf, whatever you want to call this, and my par food. And if I'm going to bake a cake inside this rack, right? So we have a very deep rack. So my cake over here is like my pot. Yeah. Benyomo, not benyomo. Assuming I got it clean, all the rules we discussed earlier are now relevant for my rack, whatever you call this, I don't know what you call this in English, my baking pan, right? This shelf that's a pan, it becomes like a pot, right? If I baking paper won't help me here. Yes?
I have been very careful about this because I haven't had a chance to ask. When you take something out of the oven, because I now have a meat oven and a pyro oven, and you put it on top of the stovetop because it's boiling hot, now that's a huge issue, right?
I'll explain what she just said. But really, we should do this. Can I borrow part of your stovetop? Because I
yes, it's so good. We're doing it in the house. Thank you. Really? Yeah. No, because again, someone sent in a shayla last week, and they didn't have the they were talking about one thing, and they were really talking about something else.
Not okay. Always, but luckily for the demonstration, we're doing well.
So we have this.
They're coming tonight.
So you
In Hebrew, this is called a chatzuva. This is the what's this called in English? In English, it's called what?
The grate.
The grate, right? Okay, so the grate that all the pots sit on. Well, ideally, Rav Soloveitchik wanted people to have separate grates and separate flames for dairy and meat. I don't know anyone that does this, but there were many rabbis who asked that people do it, and I've never heard of anyone who does it. Practically, most people don't have enough flames, or don't feel like they have enough flames. But in reality, I don't know of any house that runs the way that's written in Rav Feufer's book, in Rav Soloveitchik, etc. Bottom line, everyone uses the same flame for meat and milk, and it spills. Sometimes things spill. So the oil, the gravy, whatever I have over here, this is the one place in the house, the stove top, that's not kosher. Meaning the rest of our house should be kosher. The stovetop we know is not kosher. We know that meat and milk spill here. We have meat, you know, you make latkes and the oil splashes all over here, the dairy oil. You make pancakes, so this gets dairy. And then you make soup, you make chonk, whatever you make. It spills on here. So this gets absorbed, and this also has oils, which are dairy and meat mixed together. Now you'll tell me it's not edible. Right, most of the time it's not edible. But you don't know how much you have and how much not. So our rule is that anything that touches here, any food item, you know, if you dropped some noodles on your stovetop, or if you dropped some noodles onto here, or if you had a latke that fell onto here, you don't need it. From our end, it's not kosher. Our assumption is that everything here is not kosher. You have meat and milk grease mixed together, and this absorbs from the heat, meat and milk. So one person wanted to argue, but there's a fire that's always kashering this. Right, but this gets hot and the fire isn't kashering it. Meaning it's not a correct way to look at it. He's right, and Shulchan Aruch says what he said. Meaning he's right, that technically wherever the fire goes, the fire cleans it. But the fire doesn't get everywhere, and a lot of it gets hot, and the fire doesn't clean it. So the Maisa, we assume the whole top, our whole grate, and our stovetop are not kosher. And therefore we do not place food here. And we do not place, if any food falls onto this or the stovetop, we don't need it. We don't. That has to get discarded.
Is that only if someone's used it for meat and dairy?
Yeah.
If you've never used it for dairy, it's fine.
Right.
So
you've never used it for dairy, it's fine.
Then it's literally everything's.
Let's go back to our oven. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our oven. So now we're all set up. Okay, we want to make parv. We want to make chocolate chip cookies. We want to make challah. And we have our oven rack, tray, whatever you want to call this. and I've lined it, or I've put two trays on it, or I have a parv oven rack, and I want to bake parv in my oven. So what do I do? So the first thing I need to do is make sure I don't have gravy or pieces of chicken sitting around the oven, right? I'm not supposed to be making parv in an oven. I'm heating up the oven. If I still have gravy that's bubbling and that's giving off a good smell, the last time I made chicken, it splattered all over. Now when I turn on the oven, I get the smell of a chicken still in the house, so my oven is still flashing. So the first thing we do is we heat up the oven. If we turn up the oven to its highest heat, and we wait for the thermostat to turn off, and as far as I know, I don't have anything bubbling there. I don't have any serious spills of chicken gravy. I don't have a puddle of chicken soup or whatever on my trays. So I turn it on, and when I see the thermostat went off, that means I've reached that heat, what we call libun kal, and what I've accomplished is that my oven has just become parv. And now, if I want to put in a parv cake, open, so then my cake will be parv. Meaning, when I turn on the oven to the highest heat, assuming I don't have pieces or juice or anything that gives a good smell, if I do, then I have to wait till it burns out, which can take a little bit of time, by the way. You're better off cleaning it. If you know you have a little puddle of chicken soup, you can wait an hour before that really burns out in the oven. So you're better off cleaning it. But at any rate, once I don't have any bitten, I don't have any real substance here, even if I've used it in the last 24 hours, this is the opinion of many of the poskim, so then I have made my oven parv, and now I can make something which is completely parv, which I'll be able to eat with milk and cheese and whatever. So if I want to make challah should be parv. We don't make flejik or milvich challah, right? Or if I want to make anything else that will be completely parv. So the way I accomplish that is by A, ensuring my tray isn't flejik. So we said I'm going to have two layers for that. Or I have a parv tray. And B, I want the oven to be parv. How do I make the oven parv? I turn it to its highest heat. There are opinions, good opinions in halacha, that hold that if you haven't used your oven in the last 24 hours, and as far as you know, there isn't any gravy or anything in the oven, so then you don't even have to turn it to its highest heat. That's two opinions as to when it's an eino ben yomo, when it hasn't been used in the last 24 hours, do you still have to put it on its highest heat? Usually it doesn't cost us a lot. You know, you're going to turn on that oven anyways, so turn it on before you put the food in. You've accomplished another opinion. But this only works for the oven. It doesn't kasher my trays. My trays, which had food directly on them, the rest of the oven has steam that goes into the walls. But the trays, they absorb directly when food spills on them. On my trays, I'm going to be putting food, like challahs and chocolate chip cookies. So my trays, that doesn't work for it. But for the rest of the oven, it does kasher the rest of the oven and make it parv. So that whatever I'm going to be making in the oven at this point will be parv. Yes?
So you have let's say your milk oven, you've now kashered to be parv. You have your milk tray, and you put it.
Wait, milk is a little bit tricky. I'll explain why.
The flesh,
But milk ovens very often have a lot of real food on the bottom. Because very often, you know, it depends on what oven you have. But the fleishik is more likely to, if you can keep your milchik without real food, that's fine.
It's not but, really relevant to me, but I'm trying to figure out.
No, I should say also fleishik, because I've seen people who only had a little toaster oven, and they broil their chicken there. And when you look at the bottom of the toaster oven, there's plenty of real juice down there. I'm saying it sort of depends on how you run your oven. This works in reality when there's no real food there that's bubbling. Meaning,
my question is, you've got the oven has been kashered,
yeah,
and you have the triple tray so that the top tray is parva.
Fine.
But meantime, you have your multi-surfaced bottom tray in your now parva oven, and this doesn't to make the oven rack to be multi-surfaced.
To make the oven rack? I didn't follow.
No, to turn the oven back into being multi-surfaced.
The reason the oven turns milchik or fleishik is because of the steam the food gives off.
And this, whatever grease, whatever's on the bottom.
So we said you heat it to the point where you don't see any liquid bubbling. I said that before. There shouldn't be, it doesn't matter where, anywhere in the oven, there should not be neither real food be'en nor liquid that's bubbling. If I have gravy that's bubbling, then my oven is not yet parv. I cannot have, that's what I said in the beginning, that if you have a little pool of gravy on your tray, you should really wipe it off before you start, because it can take you a little bit of time till you reach the point that it's so dry that it's not bubbling. The assumption is, if there's only a little bit, a smatter here and there, that's almost not bubbling to begin with. By the time you turned on your oven, you don't smell anything, okay, you could move on.
So what I do in my oven, I put always aloe folia down on the bottom, and I take it out when I'm finished with the meat. Because as you say, something, the thing drops, so it doesn't drop on my oven, it doesn't...
Okay.
So that's okay. So I don't need to clean it so much, because it's on the aloe folia and I throw it away.
So long as what we see, we don't see anything. I'm saying we don't have to worry that maybe in some corner in the back there's a little puddle. That I don't have to worry about.
Okay.
Okay. So with that, we basically finished our discussion of kashrut on dishes and in terms of our pots and our pans and cooking parv and baking parv. And now we move on to all other exciting questions that are here. They're really interesting questions.